This is remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable. And I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, bonus material, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number one. In this week's episode, I have a chance to sit down with a house DJ turned podcaster whose own podcast gives you a behind-the-scenes look into the lives of other, you guessed it, podcasters. He's an entrepreneur and an app developer, and he's interviewed more than 70 podcasters. He's got a wealth of information and knowledge about podcasting, and he's well-known and well-respected in the podcasting community. I had the chance to connect with him at the Podcast Movement Conference in Fort Worth, Texas last year, and I was really looking forward to this interview. I think you'll enjoy it and get a lot out of it. Without further ado, Harry Duran. Harry, welcome to the Remarkable Podcast. I really appreciate you taking time to join me today.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on. I'm really appreciate the fact that you invited me on to come on your show.
Yeah, and so I'll give a little bit of background. We recently met at the Podcast Movement 2015 conference, and I heard your TEDx style talk or PMX talk about podcasting, and I thought that was pretty interesting. And what connected or resonated with me is that you have a background as a DJ. So because that's something that I'm passionate about, I thought I'd start there. So just give us a little bit of background. You've been a DJ for quite a while, or you were for close to 20 years. Is that right?
Yeah. As far as actual DJing, it's been about 20 years. I think I started in high school, and I was inspired by my cousin and one of my best friends who would be the life of the party. And, you know, I wanted to be that person who was entertaining other folks, making them dance. And, you know, it was the allure of the turntables, the Techniques 1200, which every DJ growing up in the 80s craves. And so you get those and you get started on your long, dark rabbit hole of buying vinyl records for the next 10 to 15 years. And it's an expensive habit if you're not getting compensated with regular paying gigs. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, now that I think about it in retrospect, it's probably one of my first entrepreneurial endeavors, because we started a little DJ crew, and then we started doing parties, started out doing high school parties, and then the high school dance, and then just sort of moved our way up to until then. And then most of the other folks dropped off, and I just kept at it and kept having a love and a passion for specifically house music. So I still have that. I still have my turntables. So every now and then I pull them out.
Yeah. So just to clarify, because, you know, as a podcast, we have a wide audience of people, and I think not everybody's going to be familiar with house music per se, but to clarify, you weren't a wedding style DJ where you had a lot of vocals and you played modern or I guess top 40 hits, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I was really, I mean, from the beginning, I was I liked going to nightclubs, and at the time when we were like 15 or 16, there were these teenage clubs that you'd go to that wouldn't serve any alcohol, but I was all about, at that time, it was really freestyle music, which is what was pretty common growing up in the East Coast in New York. And then house music was literally just getting started. So it was really, I would try to do those parties as much as possible. I think I did get roped into a couple of DJs, but definitely not my bread and butter. And it's not something where I really had that much of a good time, because, like you said, the music tends to be a bit more top 40, scripted, and you've got to do a lot of starting and stopping. So at the end of the day, there's not much dancing that's actually happening.
Yeah, just a lot of chitter chatter, and it's oftentimes an empty dance floor.
But exactly.
Part of the reason I asked that is because you're a podcaster and you interview other podcasters, which is a very spoken word or a conversational style. And that's not the style of DJ that you were. So I'm really curious as to how did you make the leap from being a DJ, oftentimes not with a microphone, to being almost exclusively on the microphone?
I guess if I had to think about it, there's probably a culmination of things that sort of led to that. One of the first conferences I went to in this podcasting digital marketing space was New Media Expo in Las Vegas in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I actually had an app built. It was a mobile app for DJs. It was called Know Your DJ. And at that time, my passion was, it still is, electronic music. And I said, well, I'm going to build something that I'm passionate about because I really think that's something important you should focus on. If you're going to do something, a new endeavor, a new entrepreneurial thing you're going to tackle, work on something that you're going to be passionate about so that you can work on it late night through the weekends, because that's really what it's going to take to get it over the hump. And that's mm-hmm. what I did with the app. So I went to the conference thinking I was going to maybe start a podcast and interview DJs. And I was a fan of a podcast called Resident Advisor. And it was really a fascinating deep dive into the lives of DJs, sort of like a peek behind the scene. And it talked a lot about not only their music, but you know what inspired them. So that was really top of mind for me. But when I got there, something interesting happened. I saw a lot of podcasters giving talks. And one of the folks there made a comment somewhere along the lines of being a podcast junkie. And at that time, I was doing a lot of research because I wanted to learn about mobile apps. And so I started downloading apps about how to build a mobile app, about podcasts about how to build a mobile app. And so I started accumulating these on my phone, and they were sort of slowly crowding out my music podcasts, which is all I knew podcasts were when I first started. And so I said, what if I interviewed these folks? And sort of the idea was born there. I hooked up with a friend, someone that I met there by the name of Chris Murphy. I ran the idea by him, and he said, sounded like a great idea. And when I came back from the conference, as you are prone to do when you attend one of these things, you have a handful of business cards. And I reached out to a couple of people, and one of them being Chase Reeves, the host of The Fizzle Show, which is a really fantastic marketing podcast. And I said, hey, would you be interested in being my first guest? I'm going to start interviewing other podcasters. And he said, yes, give me a couple of weeks to get started, which was fine because I had no podcast. And I just said, well, I got to get this started. And I joined a podcasting group to help me figure out what are the ins and outs of what I need to do in terms of microphone and artwork and all those things that you have no idea where what to do when you're getting started. And so some of those Facebook groups in the beginning helped get my feet wet and get my show started. And then one of the main things that they stressed was to have at least 3 to 5 episodes in the can. So I just proceeded to make myself as known as possible on things like Pinterest, where I landed Cindy Sanchez of Also Pinteresting, and then a couple of other folks in some other forums that really made up my first 5 to 10 guests.
So you moved directly from listening to podcasts from DJs spinning music, correct, into, I guess, educational or conversational style podcasts because of the New Media Expo conference?
Yeah. I mean, I thought at one point I was going to do both. I said, well, let me do this one because I felt like it was more accessible, because the DJs that I wanted to reach out to, I felt that they were going to be hard to get in contact with, and you've got to go through promoters and agents, booking agents, managers, what have you, until you can get to the ability to speak to the folks that you want to connect with. And I think what I realized at the time is that as I had a better shot of getting some of these other folks on my show. And I think maybe in the back of my mind, I thought I'd get my feet wet with this podcast, and I could always transition back to that podcast that I really wanted to do, the Know Your DJ podcast,
right?
Which as of yet has not been launched.
Is that still something that's in the back of your mind for the future?
Yeah, obviously, you may have had this happen already, but what happens with podcasters is once you start podcasting, then everything you touch or everything you see or everything you come in contact with becomes sort of like good topic for a new podcast. And you're just like, oh, I could start a podcast on this. I mean, at one point I was going to start one on productivity because I'm a big student of productivity and productivity hacks. And I had a domain name that I was paying for and a website that I was that I was hosting with no content. And, you know, there's no shortage of ideas. And I think over the past couple of months to a year, I've really, really learned to eliminate a lot of the noise and focus on building the podcast that I have now, which is Podcast Junkies.
Yeah, so that's a great segue. So tell us a little bit about how you came up with that. I know you mentioned that you heard the term Podcast Junkies and that resonated with you. So what led you to a podcast interviewing other podcasters as opposed to some of the other ideas that you had? How did you filter through and sort out and come to that decision?
I think it was born out of a natural curiosity for figuring out podcasting, right? Because I didn't know a lot about podcasting in general other than the couple of shows that I listened to. And the more I listened to podcasts, I really love them as an opportunity for you to learn a lot about a topic that you don't know much about. And so in my mind, I was trying to learn podcasting. So I said, well, let me start learning from people who I came to find out had been doing this now for a long time. You know, some of these early podcasters that I had on had been podcasting since 2005. And I think I made a concerted effort to figure out how I could start having a conversation with those folks because it would be interesting for my audience because they get a little history and a background into people they may not know about because there's people just getting into podcasting now who don't realize there's people that were doing this a long time ago. And then for myself, you know, obviously it's a bit selfish there, but I asked a lot of questions about things that I wanted to know about. And then as is prone to happen when you start interviewing podcasters, and one important tip I can give the listeners is when you have a fantastic conversation with a guest, then 9 times out of 10, they had a good experience, you had a good experience, and you can ask them, you know, to recommend someone to be on the show, or if they can think of anyone that would be a good fit, given that they've already experienced an hour with you, so they sort of know what they're in for, and they can think of people that they can send your way.
Yeah, that's really, really great advice. So as you were beginning to listen to podcasts, and I guess even now as you've gotten, close to 50 episodes under your belt, what has stood out to you? Because if you're like a lot of podcasters, including myself, at some point you end up with dozens of podcasts on your phone or your device, and then you start deleting stuff that's either not relevant or applicable, or as I would like to say, it's not remarkable. It's kind of a dime a dozen. So what are some of the podcasts that have really stood out to you and stood the test of time over these past few years for you? And what do you think makes them stand out?
I think, David, a lot of it has to do with where you are in terms of your growth. And if we're talking about podcasting and you're trying to grow your own podcast, what is of interest to you as you grow your show? So for me in the beginning, I really wanted to wrap my head around the art of podcasting. So yeah. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel, and I wanted to have in-depth conversations and casual conversations with people that had been doing it that I could learn from. So that's why in the beginning I spoke to people like John Lee Dumas. I spoke to people like James Schramko, who's a fantastic internet marketer based out of Australia. Mm-hmm. People like Greg Hickman, who had is really a pro when it comes to mobile. People like Daniel J. Lewis of the Audacity Theater podcast. I spoke to Srinivas Rao, who has a fantastic podcast called The Unmistakable Creative. He's really a really, really good interviewer. Obviously, I spoke to other veterans like Dave Jackson and Ray Ortega, because it's funny that you how you find out that there really is a lot of podcasts about podcasting. And yeah. I've even found some new ones. Eric K. Johnson's The Podcast Talent Coach. There's really a good podcast directed at women called She Podcasts, which I actually listen to.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of great things about
that. Yeah, that's Elsie Escobar and Jessica Kupferman. So I'm always trying to learn in the space. So that sort of category for me will always remain constant, that category of wanting to learn about the trade, if you will. You know, Dan Benjamin of the 5x5 Network has got a podcast called Podcast Method. And then the folks from Copyblogger have the Rainmaker.fm platform, and they've got a podcast called Showrunner,
yep,
which is Jared Morris and Johnny Naster of Hack the Entrepreneur. So you would think that there'd be a lot of repetition across these shows, but what you find is that they each take their own spin on things and they approach it from their own perspective, and they've been successful in their own way. So one of my little hacks is to actually listen to podcasts at 2x speed. And for most of the stuff, since it's really informational, then you can get away with that. And I use Overcast. And it doesn't change the pitch, so it doesn't sound like the Chipmunks. It just speeds it up. And it takes some getting used to, of course.
Sure.
The first time you listen at 1.25, you feel like you're going a little bit crazy. And you really can't do anything else besides listen to the podcast when you start listening to them that fast. So then as that was happening, I started listening to other sorts of shows. Now, one category that I've been attracted to recently is storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that comes from the NPR group of podcasts. So shows like 99% Invisible, there's a show called Mystery Show. Obviously, Startup was really popular,
mm-hmm,
from Gimlet Media. And Mystery Show is part of that network as well. And then there's a show called Nocturne that I came across a couple of months ago. I just interviewed Vanessa Lowe from that show. Nocturne, along with five other podcasters, created a collective called The Herd. And I actually just released today an episode with Robert McGinley Myers of Anxious Machine. I'm really fascinated by the level of detail and attention they put into their shows. Some of these record episodes only once a month, and it's really interesting and a complete shift away from some of these other entrepreneurial podcasts. And it's almost like the two worlds exist independent of each other, because when I ask a lot of the storytellers about the entrepreneurial podcast, even someone like a Pat Flynn or John Lee Dumas, they might know who they are, and you know, sometimes they have no idea who they are, which is funny. When you're in that entrepreneurial space, you think everyone knows,
yeah,
who Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas is, but it's really a small world and a small bubble that we live in. And likewise, you know, the people on the entrepreneurial side are just focused on tips and tricks on how to grow your show, how to market your show. So I'm really trying to broaden the range of it. And I think the fact that I have a podcast that allows me to speak to podcasters is really fascinating, because I'm increasing the awareness of the show to the point where I'm starting to get some really, really interesting guests coming on, and some more folks from the Radiotopia family are scheduled to come on the show. I am, hopefully, fingers crossed, going to be having Helen Zaltzman on from The Illusionist, and just other hosts that, in my mind, are pushing my my abilities as a conversationalist and as an interviewer and as a host. And that's sort of my challenge to myself as well. Like if I felt like I was in a rut and I started repeating the same format over and over and people weren't getting value, then I'd feel like the show had hit a wall. So I don't want that to happen. And I make it a conscious effort to put myself in situations where I'm uncomfortable. Even that TEDx style talk you heard me give at PMX. I mean, it was only 10 minutes, but obviously I was a bit nervous getting started, and I was revamping the content of the talk even like that same morning with my roommate. I was like, well, I went through a couple of variations of what that talk would sound like, and that was only 10 minutes. And then later on during the conference, I also participated in a workshop with Leah Tao of the podcast Strangers, and she asked people who wanted to volunteer to go up on stage and tell the story. And again, I did that. So I think the consistent thread has been looking for opportunities where I can stretch myself and grow my show and grow my own skills as a host. And the only way to do that is to put myself out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, that's great. And you've dropped a lot of names in there, and I'm going to do my best to make sure they're listed in the show notes for people that want to go exploring and check out, because that could take several days to get through and listen to some of those. Let me change the direction just a little bit and move into how you're building your audience. And before that, What is the ultimate purpose of your podcast? Is this an art or craft for you, or is there a business goal behind the podcast?
I think I think at the beginning, obviously, like everyone else, I thought, you know, since I was talking to a lot of entrepreneurial podcasts, that was sort of top of mind. And so I did all the things you should do when you're trying to monetize your podcast. You have a lead magnet, you collect emails, and then you try to sell a product, and you try to figure out how to get a sponsor.
Right.
And I think maybe in the beginning I was too focused on that, and I was a bit haphazard with the release schedule of the podcast. And then I sort of had a shift because I realized I was starting to change the folks that were coming on the show, you know, the types of guests that I was having. And I think I made a conscious effort to be, A, more consistent with the show, and B, a bit of a stickler more in terms of the quality and how I wanted to present the story of the guest that I had on. So it really moved to less of a focus on monetization and really growing the listenership. And in a way, they sort of go hand in hand. But I think it's sort of, you know, putting the cart before the horse. I think you have to really focus on developing a quality show and something that you're proud of. And I think over time, the listenership will grow, the fans will come. And you want people to have an experience when they first hear your show that it's something that they really like and they'd really resonate with. And that's really what's been happening lately, because I have long conversations. I mean, these are not just, you know, half an hour Q&A sessions where I'm blasting through, you know, the same 10 questions over and over. I really try to make them as conversational as possible. And I want folks who listen to feel like they're having or they're taking part in a candid conversation with some of my guests, because it's been said before, but I mean, sometimes the best part of a conversation or of an interview comes 15 to 20 minutes to a half an hour in. And that's what I've been cognizant of. And that's why I don't put a cap on how long the interview is. So sort of like to get back to your question, I think the focus right now is to build a quality show. And I think as a result of that, I'm already starting to have a couple of one-off conversations with sponsors. And I think sponsors are going to be more interested in a quality show that's interesting, that has interesting guests, and that you know, you're sort of building a buzz around.
Yeah, so as your and I guess let me back up just one more step are you a software developer? Is building your app and everything your day job and podcasting on the side, or are you building a podcast as your primary business?
No, I still have my day job, which is IT consulting.
Okay.
And so I've been doing that and a variety of other things for the past 20 years. So having that job has afforded me the luxury of building out a podcast at my own pace.
Yeah, that's great.
Because if it was something where I felt like I had to monetize it to, you know, pay the rent or put food on the table, I can't imagine the level of stress that would cause. And I think there's some folks that are out there that are in that camp, because I think people have put all their eggs into the podcasting basket without having a backup plan, because they may have gotten the impression that it's easy to monetize. And I mean, from my experience, it's not easy, and it's something that takes a lot of work. And I've heard, you know, numbers that have been thrown out in the past in terms of how long it takes to build a new project or a new endeavor. And folks say, you know, sometimes you need to give this anywhere between 3 to 5 years before something can really take off, before it really gains traction. That's not to say there aren't cases of people who have been very successful with their podcast in a shorter amount of time. But I think those are the exceptions. So for me, it's been important to have my main job and have this more as a hobby and a passion project. If it grows into something bigger than that, then that would be fantastic. But it's really afforded me the luxury to take my time with it and really focus on the quality of the show, as opposed to figuring out how I can quickly monetize it.
Yeah, and I think that's a great piece of information to pull out for the listeners here, is that we do see a lot of overnight successes, and some of them are literally overnight successes where they launch something and it happens. And a lot of those overnight successes are 10 years in the making, where they've come from another avenue, whether it's radio or, like you said, NPR and things like that, and they're just moving into a slightly different avenue. But I also think it's interesting to hear, you know, for the listeners to know that you're not stressing about the financial side and rushing to grow your numbers and to focus on the numbers, but mostly focusing on the product and the end result. And I think that's really important to hear. What, so you have a day job and you've come from a DJ background. What do you think you've taken from those as far as marketing and customer service and serving people? And what of those aspects have you brought into your podcast?
So I'm a student of, in general, of like learning as much as possible about something that I get myself into. And digital marketing is no different, because although I worked in marketing departments in the past, digital marketing, as you're well aware of, is its own beast, right? There's a whole set of challenges that are inherent with trying to market something online. And there's a whole different set of rules. So I had a one-off coach in the beginning. And then more recently, I joined a more formal coaching program where I've learned a lot about the importance of marketing, marketing in the right way, marketing in an ethical way, and just sort of different things you can do to build up your brand. And so as a result of that, I think for me, I'm a student of productivity. You know, I'm a student of efficiency. I'm a big fan of creating standard operating procedures. And it's probably a bit of my OCD nature where I like to have things written down. So I do have a virtual assistant in the Philippines, and that helps me with a lot of the behind the scenes work related to the podcast. And I've tried to instill a lot of those SOPs or standard operating procedures in place so that a lot of it can run without me being there from a day-to-day basis. And obviously 50 episodes in, we sort of get into like a well-oiled machine. You know, I know ahead of time what I need to ask of my guests, be it artwork or a bio, or even something like what's your Skype ID when I'm setting up the scheduling tool. So I try to make sure if there's anything that's repetitive or that can put a process in place for, I do that to make my life easier, because at the end of the day, I still have my regular responsibilities with my job. So I really can't have the podcast be another 40-hour endeavor, because there's just so only so many hours in the day. So I'm always looking for ways to be more efficient, and I'm always trying to learn different things I can do to market the show. And I've tried a variety of different ways, some successful, some not. So I'm really active on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook with each episode. I make it a point to communicate with guests and give them an easy avenue for them to share the show. And then I'm creative with doing the episodic artwork. So I tag them in that. And I also just try to make it as fun and as engaging as possible every time there's a new episode out, and sort of make it like a mini event every time that happens.
Yeah, that's great. So if you could tell us a little bit more about what you think is probably the most effective thing that you've done to build your audience and get the word out there. Anything specific?
Yeah, I think I don't know that I can point to one specific thing if I think about it. I think it's really a lot of little things, because at the end of the day, you can't pick where your audience is going to find you. You don't have that luxury. You have to sort of be everywhere, but be everywhere in a strategic fashion. Now, obviously, you're not going to learn and master all the social media platforms in one shot. So, so just pick one and deep dive. So, for example, go deep on Twitter. You know, go deep on Twitter for 1 month or 3 months, and really learn everything you can. Build up that audience. When you share posts, when you share episodes, go out of your way to find out what your guest's Twitter handle is. If you're referencing an article, go out of your way to find out what the magazine's Twitter handle are. Put in a relevant hashtag. Put in the right link to the episode you're linking to. Like I said, I touched upon it earlier. I'm a bit OCD about this stuff, but I'm going to take the time to post something on Twitter. I'm not going to just casually say, hey, go read this, and then make the person reading the tweet work that much harder to find out what it is I was talking about or who I'm referring to. You know, just leverage the fact that some of these things can be viral in nature, and just get the most bang for your buck for things like a Twitter post. And then after that, branch out into something like Instagram. It's obviously a visual medium, a lot of pictures. And that's one of the reasons I tell people to use unique artwork for every single episode, because it gives you an opportunity to post on a regular basis on Instagram. And the fantastic thing about that, I think last time I checked, it's about 2,000 characters that are allowed on Instagram. So basically what I do is I repurpose my show notes and I put them on Instagram. And then again, I do the homework. I look for my guests on Instagram if they have a handle, because a lot of times it's going to be different from what's on Twitter. Find it, tag them on there, put relevant hashtags on there as well, and make it as engaging as possible. Each platform has its own core audience and each platform has its own fans. So those are two examples from a social media perspective. And another thing that's been helpful for me in terms of networking and making new friends in the podcasting space are live conferences. And obviously, you know, you and I can attest to that as a result of podcast movement.
Absolutely.
But it happened with New Media Expo. It happened with Podcast Movement last year. It happened with New Media Expo this year. It's happened with meetups I've had here in Los Angeles. You know, I go out of my way to be around other podcasters in a live forum whenever I can, because for me that's important. And I think a lot of people think that, you know, they're not going to get a lot of value out of them. But this year I really made a concerted effort. I had t-shirts made and they're bright yellow and obnoxious, and they were definitely seen roaming the halls of Podcast Movement.
Yeah, I mean, you make a fantastic point about the conferences. And what I've found coming out of the conference is that, and I think this will be some helpful information for everybody that's listening, is that occasionally you're trying to build an audience geographically, so near you, where you are. So a lot of people are building businesses within a confinement of how far they can get to a meeting or an event. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but occasionally you need to get out and travel and get to a larger audience. And I think that's what was really beneficial for me to get to the Podcast Movement, to find a group of people who are passionate about podcasting instead of trying to dig through the weeds in Eastern North Carolina or Central North Carolina and trying to find a small group of people. It was nice just to end up at the conference and have 1,000 podcasting fans all around you, regardless of location. So that was, as you mentioned, extremely beneficial to me. I was curious, do you go out of your way to pick or select guests based on the audience that will connect you with, or are you more focused on finding the people that you just want to interview?
Yeah, it's funny you asked that. It's been a hot topic lately. Chris Brogren talked about it recently because he was being hit up by a podcaster whose podcast he was on. And the guy was sort of being a bit of a nag in terms of saying, hey, don't forget you were on the show. Make sure you
promote me.
And it sort of really rubbed him the wrong way. And he spoke about it on Facebook. And then Srinivas Rao made a post about it on Medium related to that. And I think if you're going to go after a guest simply because you want some sort of influencer effect based on their popularity, I don't really think it's going to happen. And for myself, for my show, since I've always wanted people and listeners to feel like it's a conversation between two folks who know each other or have at least have some sort of connection, prior to coming on the show, typically what I do is I get a lot of my guests from, you know, meeting folks in person or as a referral or because I'm a super fan of the show and I've listened to the show so much that I can get into a conversation with them and really have a ton of stuff to talk about because, you know, I really know the guest really, really well. So I think the advice that I'd give for folks that are doing an interview-based podcast is, you know, A, go out of your way to find people that have not been on shows and just do a little bit of homework to find out what it is about that person that you find interesting from a conversation standpoint, not from a popularity standpoint. If the first thing you do when you book a guest or have a guest you're looking up to as a potential guest is look at how many, you know, followers they have on Twitter or how big their Instagram following is, then you're really going at it the wrong way. Because I've noticed even, you know, with some of my bigger guests, I mean, they don't share a lot because they just, you know, they're really doing you a favor by coming on your show. So you shouldn't try to abuse that privilege that they gave you to come on. And I think go at it from a sincere perspective of wanting to connect with the person. Regardless of whether they share your show or not, your objective should be to have that person on because you really, really, really want to talk to that person. You really want to have an in-depth conversation. And you really want to try to go somewhere that that person hasn't gone before so they don't feel like, you know, this person is just going through the motions with me and they're just trying to use me for my my influence.
Yeah, and I'm along the same lines, and I agree. I think people can tell when they're being used or when they're really and truly valued. So I also recommend trying to do your best to see how you're either looking for expert advice and information or to build your craft or to add value as opposed to just using somebody as a cheap gimmick to promote your show. I think people can tell.
Yeah.
The listeners can tell as well. And I think it comes across as a little bit fake. One thing I'd also like to know from you is for myself personally, and also for the listeners here is what have you found that just doesn't work? I think there's no shortage of people in the digital space that are building a brand or their own business with false information, or maybe they read something somewhere and so they're just repeating it. What have you tried as far as building your brand and your audience that just hasn't worked and that you've either stopped doing or you're reevaluating whether you're going to continue to do it or not?
I mean, I'm trying to think of an example of something that really, really bombed or hasn't failed. I mean, I'm sort of the person who tries different things. And maybe, you know, the fact that there's not a big sponsor on the show yet is a result of me not having reached out far and wide. I know people do this and they have great success. And a lot of times, it's just a function of not being afraid to ask. And I've heard of friends that have gotten sponsors simply because they heard someone on another show and they said, "Hey, obviously if you're on a podcast already, then you're prone to advertise another podcast." And then they've prepared a letter and they said, "I heard you on this show and I thought you'd be a good fit for my show." So I think I haven't done as much of that as I probably should, and it's something I'm gonna be looking into. The other thing I tried was I tried repurposing content. So I've taken the first 25 interviews and I created an ebook. It's a Kindle book. It's $2.99 on the Amazon store and it's called Around the Podcast Campfire. So I think I probably could have done a better job marketing that. And there's tons of blog posts on how to actually do that the right way. Mm-hmm. But I think since I was holding on to the book for such a long time, I actually had it done and I was trying to wait for the right time to market perfectly. And before I knew it, 3 months have gone by and I said, "Man, I just got to get this book out." So I sort of rushed it out the door and it sort of landed with a bit of a thud. But I think over time, it's a nice calling card because I put it on my website now. And it was a nice way to reach out again to my past guests. So definitely a lesson learned there. And I'll probably continue it with every 25, just go back through the content and, you know, repurpose it and package it in a way that sort of tells a story. So that book, each chapter covers a specific topic like social media, like podcasting equipment, like the importance of networking. So wherever there was comments made by a guest on that specific topic, then those were pulled into that chapter. So it was actually a lot of fun, a nice trip down memory lane for me to revisit some of that stuff. But it's just one of those things that serves as an example for you to keep trying things because especially with repurposing, you know, you have content really already out there. Mm-hmm. A lot. I know some podcasters repurpose episodes into blog posts, and I know now there's guidance being given for bloggers to repurpose blog posts into podcast episodes. So it probably goes both ways, but just, you know, try to be as creative as possible with content that you already have.
Yeah, that's great. And I'll definitely include a link to that book. That sounds really interesting. Now, a couple other questions here before we wrap up. Do you mind sharing with us any, and I think you talked about this at the podcast movement during your talk, but any major goofs or big faux pas that you've made that were somewhat embarrassing, but maybe turned out okay in the long run?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is around missteps of a beginning podcaster. I have to do a lot of traveling sometimes for my job, so I do interviews on the road. I forgot my charger for my MacBook, and since I record through right now I'm using a Zoom H5 as my sound card, mm-hmm. and so I can get good quality sound on the road, but it doesn't really do much good if you don't have any juice on your laptop.
Right.
Well, it's funny, and I tried to do it anyway, and as the guest was speaking, I was literally staring at the battery counter, and it was like 5%, 4%, 3%, and the guy's talking, I'm like, finish your point, please. And then it shut down. I was like, oh, I thought it was really like the first time I had lost an interview, but when I got back home, I found out that thankfully the podcast episode was still available. And so I was able to recover that. But I think every podcaster at some point is going to have that cherry popped of like losing, having a technical failure and it's going to come with an important guest, obviously. Murphy's right. Law is going to kick in. The other thing that happened, and I think I touched upon it in the PMX talk, was the fact that I had a really, for me, one of my most important interviews was with Brendan McDonald, of the producer for WTF with Marc Maron, mm-hmm. which, you know, another tip here is sometimes you just have to ask because you never know. I had heard him on The Wolf Den, and that episode was about a year old, and I literally just tweeted him, but I tweeted at, you know, Brendan McDonald, his Twitter handle, mm-hmm. Producer McD, I think it is. And I said, I included The Wolf Den, and then he responded. He's like, oh, thanks. You know, some of that information was a bit old. And I said, well, would you be interested in coming on? I mean, immediately the light bulb went off. I'm like, well, how about you come on my show? And he said, yeah, that would be cool. The thing I didn't know was this was a week before the Obama interview. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, he's like, yeah, I'll be busy for the next couple of weeks. And I was like, yeah, I wonder what he's busy with.
And he's on vacation, right?
Yeah. Come on. What could possibly be more important coming on my show? And so the Obama interview comes out, and I'm like, whoa, like, I'm never going to get this guy on. But true to his word, he did, I followed up with him, and I said, he's still interested. And he said yes. And the day of the interview, I had forgotten because of the link. I use a service called Calendly, and it asks for the person's Skype ID, and I had it, and it was sitting in my calendar. And then I'm sitting there waiting for him to dial in. I'm like, why hasn't he called? And then he's like, pings me. He's like, are we still doing this? I was like, real big, especially like I was so nervous already with the interview. I talk about like a range of emotions. I'm like super excited. And then there's like 5 minutes where I think he just blew me off totally. Yeah. Then I get, I get super depressed. And then, and then I realized that he had sent me his ID, so I should have pinged him before the call. So then I swing over to super embarrassment. And then I'm trying to get and then we get up online. Then that swings back over to super stressed out. And then, you know, finally I get into a bit of, just things smooth out a bit into the conversation. And at that point, I just let him talk as much as he could because I wanted to maximize the information he was sharing. So all in all, I got a lot of good feedback on that. I think it's episode 47. And it was really like a big win for me as to be able to land someone of that caliber. And I think it's just a testament to how the show is growing. And so I'm looking to do things of that nature and going after bigger and better guests.
Yeah, I've noticed, I think, in my perspective, I think there's just a lot of grace, and people are okay in the podcasting space because so many podcasts are either done by one person or a small, very, very small group of just 2, 3, 4, 5 people. And so we all have our hands in the mix and on the technical side as well. So, and we've all messed up. So I think it's a very generous and giving platform without a lot of egos that I found. So there's a lot of room for error, and people are okay with it. And I think that really goes a long way into bringing in more people and making it okay for people to just get started.
Yeah, the community is very forgiving. It's very helpful. And to your point, I mean, it's really something that's been, that I've noticed about the podcasting community in general, is we all like to help each other out. And it's the rising tide lifting all boats analogy.
Yeah. Is there a particular podcast or person you've run into that you feel like stands out just above and beyond everybody else as far as adding value to you specifically? You know, any other podcasters out there that have done a lot for you?
I mean, just people that are in my space that I'm close friends with. I mean, I had someone on recently for my 50th episode, Chris Cerrone. He now has a co-host, Lacey Ursiroli. They have a show called The Cerrone Show. He started out about the same time that I did, and he's rocketed to millions of downloads. And he was one of the listeners early on to the first episode I put up on SoundCloud with Chase Reeves. And he said, I really like that conversational style. I think you're going to have a really, really good show. And he then proceeded to come on my show. We spoke for an hour and a half. And then I went on his show, and then we spoke for like an hour. And he's been a good friend and always supportive of things that I'm doing. But it's just that community is really, really good. And I've just met a lot of good friends as a result of having the podcast. Denny Cray, another friend of mine, has a podcast called Diz Runs. And, you know, I sort of connected to folks where we've all started around the same time, and we're roughly at about the same number of episodes. And we just keep tabs on each other and keep pushing each other higher.
Yeah, that's great. And this is probably might be a difficult question to answer, but if you had to delete every single podcast that you're subscribed to, what's the one that would still be on your podcast if you had to get rid of all the rest? What's the one thing that you can't go without?
Yeah, I mean, especially for someone who's who's a podcast junkie, right? I mean, it's I think there's some marker that talks about killing your darlings, and it's you sort of like trim the fat and mm-hmm. and really think about what are the ones that you get the most value of. I mean, they each all serve their purpose. I'm a big fan of 99% Invisible. I've been really digging Mystery Show. I think it has to be really the sweet spot. If it had to be one, it would have to be high in production value, high in motivational content and inspiring. And I'm like scrolling through and I'm trying to see like which one of those really motivate me, because you know there's different parts of the brain that I need active at certain times.
Sure,
so
sure.
Some of it is right side, some of it is left side. But you know, obviously I think maybe if I gun to my head, maybe 99% Invisible.
Yeah, that's got some of the educational component as well to keep learning.
Although WTF with Marc Maron is really one of my new favorites from an interviewer perspective.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination of the interview and humor and fascinating people all mixed together.
Yeah.
What if I say the word remarkable, what comes to mind? And it doesn't have to be necessarily about podcasts, but what do you, as you go throughout your day or your week, what stands out as being remarkable that you interact with?
Kind-hearted people. You know, and people who I see in my day-to-day life who go out of their way to make, you know, to brighten someone else's day, whether that's, you know, paying it forward or being overly gracious with a homeless person. I think people that do things that help me put my life into perspective. Hmm. Because that's something that I constantly need to be reminded of. And at the end of the day, you know, if our episode doesn't go up, it's not like we're saving lives here.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, people that do good things in general just really, really grab my attention. Kind-hearted people and people that treat other people, you know, like the golden rule, like, you want to be treated. And, you know, you see that sometimes in the podcasting space, and you see it, you know, I see it sometimes just on the street, and, you know, no one specifically jumps out at mine, but occasionally I see, you know, good deeds, and it really like resonates with me, because I think that we definitely need more of that in this world.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that's what we see oftentimes on social media that goes viral is are those episodes or posts where people really go out of their way to be generous and kind to someone. I think you're absolutely right. That goes a really long way. Do you have any advice before we wrap up here for podcasters, whether they're new podcasters or they've been going at it a while, based on your experience and you've talked to so many different great podcasters already, any advice for being remarkable and finding their niche or their voice?
Yeah, a lot of times you may not discover what your voice is until you've been doing it a while. And I can't say that I was clear about the direction I wanted my show to take on episode one. I'm a bit clearer at episode 50, and I'll probably be even better at 100. But even at episode 500, I mean, one of the things Roman Mars talked about in his keynote at Podcast Movement was that you should constantly be improving. It's almost like each episode is an experiment, and with each experiment, you should tweak something that moves you forward. And so move yourself out of comfort zone. Please don't create a podcast that sounds like every other podcast on there. Please don't have it end in preneur or or on fire.
Yeah, that's great. Or yeah, that's great.
Because there's plenty of that already. And create your own category, you know, and you know, if you think you've niched down already, then give it another, you know, hack and niche down even further. You know, there's so many. I heard a podcast the other day that was just about the movie career of Val Kilmer. So I
wow,
mean,
yeah, that's pretty narrow.
So I mean, there's something, you know, wherever you know, whatever you can think of, there's an ability for you to add your own spin. Because, David, you and I could be doing the same exact topic from a podcast perspective, but because of your unique life circumstances, where you were born, where you grew up, where you went to school, you know, the sports you played, the organizations you joined, who you married, like what part of the country you live in, where you've traveled to, we're going to tell two completely mm-hmm. different stories.
Yeah.
And we can interview the same 20 people and they're going to be completely different interviews because, you know, we're going to go down different rabbit holes with those people. So just embrace what it is about you that makes you different and share that with your audience. And the people that do resonate with that are going to be your true fans.
That's fantastic. And I think that's a great place to stop. Before we hang up, Harry, tell us one thing or one place where you want to send people. Where can we go learn more about you or follow you and keep up and see what's going on?
Yeah, the best place to learn more about the show and to subscribe and listen to episodes is podcastjunkies.com.
Great. Well, I will include that in the show notes along with a lot of the other things that you've mentioned. And again, I honestly and truly do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to speak with me. And I think what you've shared will be very helpful to a lot of people listening. So thanks again, Harry.
Thanks again for having me on, David. I really had a good time.
Great. Let's keep in touch. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to the first episode of Remarkable. I know you've got plenty of podcasts to choose from, so I do want to say that I truly appreciate you and your time. Thanks for tuning in. You can find my notes, all the relevant links, including the podcasts that Harry mentioned, plus a downloadable transcript of the entire podcast by going to supersimple.com/Harry. That's supersimple.com/Harry. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by OnePriceTaxes.com. Life is full of surprises. Filing your taxes shouldn't be. OnePriceTaxes has been making online tax filing easy, accurate, and affordable since 2007. State returns are included for free, and unlike other online tax filing sites, there are no hidden fees, guaranteed. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zimer, spelled X-I-M-E-R. Zimer offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game apps, and radio. You can reach them via Twitter at Zimer Media. And again, that's X-I-M-E-R. Just to give you a little bit of a background, Julio and I met at the Podcast Movement Conference in 2015. Hit it off, discussing music and audio production. So I reached out to him after the fact and asked him if he would be interested in helping me create something remarkable for my podcast, and he agreed. So that's what you're listening to, a creation of Julio. So if you need additional music or if you would like something custom, please reach out to Julio. I highly recommend him. Very pleased with the process and his insight and creativity. And again, you can reach him at Zimer Media, X-I-M-E-R Media. And if you'd like additional marketing resources, bonus material, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening.